Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, January 12, 2024, Section A, State and Local News. Arsenic in Midland drinking water exceeds EPA limit. City responds by Ben Schaefer. After supplying water to customers that have exceeded safe arsenic levels, the City of Midland released a statement Tuesday saying the levels are cause for concern, but not an emergency. This month, the city released a public notice stating the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality notified the City of Midland Water Purification Plant that the drinking water being supplied to customers had exceeded the maximum contaminant level for arsenic, public notice states. The Environmental Protection Agency established that the maximum contaminant level for arsenic is 0.010 milligrams per liter, based on the running annual average, the notice states. Analysis of Midland's drinking water indicated a compliance value for the fourth quarter of 2023 of 0.011 milligrams per liter. This is not an emergency. However, some people who drink water containing arsenic in excess of the MCL over many years could experience skin damage or problems with their circulatory system, and many have an increased risk of getting cancer, the public notice states. Midlanders do not have to use an alternative water supply. However, the letter states that if a resident has health concerns, they may want to talk to a doctor to gain more information about how this may affect them. In the public notice, the city stated it would blend water sources better and pilot a new treatment technique to remove arsenic. On Tuesday, Carl Crago, City of Midland Managing Director, acknowledged water quality and the city's response in a statement. As you may know, maintaining arsenic levels within the permissible limit in our groundwater sources is a delicate and continuous process. The standard limit is a yearly average of 0.010. Recently, we observed a slight increase to 0.0108 at T-Bar Ranch, marginally exceeding this limit. This necessitates ongoing adjustments in our water blending strategies between the two primary groundwater sources at T-Bar to ensure compliance with safety standards. It is important to note that prolonged exposure to high arsenic levels is required for any potential health risks. However, maintaining these standards is vital for public health and confidence. Before my tenure with the City of Midland, exceeding this limit was a more frequent occurrence. Along with my predecessor, Laura Wilson, under whom I served as assistant director, we have significantly reduced these incidents. The last violation notice we issued was back in 2017, a record we are proud of and strive to maintain. In our commitment to provide safe and high-quality water, we are now pioneering a new treatment method that promises to remove up to 57% of arsenic from the groundwater. This innovative approach positions us as the first public water system in West Texas to trial such technology, potentially revolutionizing groundwater treatment in our region. We are optimistic that this pilot project will not only resolve our current challenges, but also elevate Midland's water quality to the highest standard in the area. Thank you for your attention to this matter. We are dedicated to keeping Midland at the forefront of water quality management and look forward to updating you on the progress of our new treatment initiative. Going Wild, Jumanji Brings Exotic Animals to West Texas, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Animal lovers since day one, Alex Gonzalez and Freddie Cortez wanted to bring a new experience to West Texas. Inspired by the joy radiating from Gonzalez's kids every time they took a trip to the pet store, Jumanji offers Midlanders an opportunity to learn about and raise an array of exotic animals. Critters such as cockatoos, parrots, lovebirds, lionfish, eels, axolotls, bunnies, hedgehogs, squirrels, chinchillas, skinny pigs, hairless guinea pig, gerbils, turtles, and more can be found at the new shop. They also offer food, treats, cages, bowls, leashes, toys, and more for all sorts of four-legged friends. Three monkeys, one capuchin and two spider, make up Gonzalez and Cortez's personal pets. Note, Jumanji does not sell monkeys. With only a week under their belt, the cousin duo said goodbye to an eel, a few birds, and others. I have different suppliers across Texas and the country, but also a few local breeders, Gonzalez said. Now that we're here, people don't have to drive to Lubbock or Dallas. I try to make the pets affordable because I want the trip to be more expensive than coming to see me. Of course, owning exotic animals comes with special care. For Gonzalez and Cortez, this means having strict rules within the shop. First, they clean all the cages, floors, and surfaces daily. Next, no outside pets can come inside. This helps keep the birds calm and eliminates the possibility of unknown sicknesses being transferred to the shop's tenants. The same criteria is followed when selecting animals as well. Naturally, Gonzalez and Cortez know some community members won't agree with the business. However, the team keeps an understanding outlook and strong backbone. I'm not taking them from the wild. That's sad. These animals are already here. They're still wild animals and still have wild instincts, but they don't know the wild lifestyle because they're bred in captivity. I'm making sure they go to a good home, Gonzalez admitted. To help ensure a smooth transition, Gonzalez and Cortez make sure the correct food, engaging items, and other necessities are purchased as well. As for the future of the shop, Gonzalez and Cortez hope to expand one day, bringing new animals and fun opportunities to the Permian Basin. We don't have any other pet stores like this. We want people to come with their kids and just enjoy it. Don't even have to buy anything. It's not a zoo or anything like that, but it's something different for them, and that's what we wanted, Gonzalez explained. Jumanji is located at 4611 State Highway 349. Hours run 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., Monday through Sunday. Railroad Commission issues weather alert ahead of Arctic Blast by Mala McEwen. An Arctic blast is headed to the Permian Basin, and warnings are being issued to prepare for temperatures to fall into the teens, with wind chills possibly falling below zero. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas Wednesday issued a weather watch beginning January 15th through January 17th, an advance notification of expected significant weather and higher electrical demand and the potential for lower reserves. Wind chill values by Monday morning could be below zero in the Panhandle and across West Texas. For Central Texas, North Texas, West Central Texas, wind chill values will be in the single digits. The Railroad Commission Thursday issued a notice to operators ahead of the expected frigid temperatures. The agency urges residents and oil and gas producers alike to watch weather forecasts and safety alerts during the cold weather. In its notice to oil and gas and pipeline operators, the RRC urged monitor local, state, national weather reports for updates on potential severe weather impacts. Heed all watches, warnings, and orders issued by local emergency officials. Secure all personnel, equipment, and facilities to prevent injury or damage. And monitor and prepare operations for potential impacts as safety permits. In addition, the RRC advised all operators to monitor and report road conditions during the weather event. We know that even when winter weather events begin to roll into our region, the Permian Basin oil and gas industry will still be hard at work ensuring that reliable natural gas is available to heat everyone's homes and provide electricity to millions, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association said in its alert to members. The PBA listed some of the measures being taken to ensure continued production and distribution of natural gas to power electricity and help heat homes and businesses. Those measures include weatherization and inspection of equipment and infrastructure, comprehensive winter preparedness plans that engage both industry and state agencies, storage of natural gas in preparation for fluctuations in demand, improved and transparent communications between industry, regulators, and consumers. The RRC reports that all of what's known as Tier 1 facilities, gas processing plants, underground gas storage facilities, pipelines that directly connect to electricity generation plants, and oil and gas leases that produce more than 5 million cubic feet of gas per day have been inspected and no violations identified. Weatherization inspections will continue through the spring. Another critical component is the amount of natural gas in underground storage that can be utilized in emergency situations. At the end of November, which was the typical end of the injection season for winter, there was approximately 488.8 billion cubic feet of gas in storage, a 5% increase compared to the end of November 22, and the highest amount in 6 years. The Police Department. Two arrests made after shots fired at local apartment complex by B.K. Richter. The Odessa Police Department responded to 2950 Pleasant due to calls about multiple shots being fired on Tuesday at approximately 11:48 p.m. Witnesses reported hearing multiple shots being fired from an apartment at the Westwood Square Apartments. When officers arrived, they observed a broken window at the apartment along with a mesh screen on the ground. Officers initially made contact with 24-year-old Pamela Melendez. Melendez alleged that her boyfriend, identified as 23-year-old Isaac Becerril, had fired multiple shots at the apartment. Odessa police officers located Becerril in the 2200 block of Catalina. Becerril was reportedly found to have marijuana and a firearm in his possession. Based on the information presented during the investigation, OPD obtained a search warrant for the Westwood Square apartment. During the investigation, officers located a bullet hole in the closet. The bullet had traveled through the wall and into the next-door neighbor's apartment while they were sleeping inside. Officers reportedly located 7.6 pounds of marijuana, 21.7 grams of THC, 10.2 grams of ecstasy, and MDMA pills inside the apartment. Officers also reportedly located 9 additional firearms, including 2 stolen guns and one that had the serial number removed from it. Both Melendez and Becerril were charged and arrested. They were both transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Becerril was charged with 2 second-degree felony counts for the possession of controlled substances. He was also charged with a third-degree felony for the deadly conduct discharge of a firearm. Another third-degree felony was added for the possession of marijuana. 2 counts, state jail felony, for the theft of firearms, and 3 misdemeanors for tampering with identification numbers, the unlawful carrying of a weapon, and the discharge of a firearm in certain municipalities were included. Melendez was charged with 2 second-degree felonies for possession of a controlled substance, in addition to a third-degree felony for the possession of marijuana. She was also charged with 2 state jail felonies for the theft of a firearm. Additionally, Melendez was charged with a misdemeanor for tampering with identification numbers. Odessa Police Department. SWAT team responds to standoff after shots fired call by B.K. Richter. Odessa police officers responded to a shots fired call in the 4900 block of Locust Avenue on Thursday at 12:24 a.m. While on the scene, officers determined a man had gotten into an argument with his mother and friend and then allegedly fired his firearm inside the residence. Both the mother of the man and the friend were removed from the residence. Officers called out Crisis Negotiators Unit in addition to the SWAT team. After hours of communication, officers reported that the suspect was located and found in possession of a firearm outside of his residence. The suspect was later identified as 30-year-old Randy Baker Jr. He was placed under arrest and charged with a second-degree felony of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. In addition, Baker Jr. was allegedly charged with two misdemeanors for the unlawful carrying of a weapon and discharging a firearm within the city limits. Another misdemeanor of public intoxication was added to the list of charges. According to the police report, Baker Jr. was arrested as a fugitive from justice for an extraditable warrant out of New Mexico for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Says state closed park without city's permission. Located in Border City, where migrant crossings had climbed, by Valerie Gonzalez, Associated Press. The mayor of a Texas border city at the center of Republican Governor Greg Abbott's aggressive measures to curb migrant crossings accused the state Thursday of a new escalation as state troopers closed a large public park along the Rio Grande without asking permission. The park is a new tension point in Eagle Pass, where large waves of migrant arrivals last month temporarily closed a rail crossing and overwhelmed shelters. U.S. Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas visited Eagle Pass on Monday, days after Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson toured the border city. Eagle Pass Mayor Rolando Salinas questioned why the state closed the 50-acre park now, since daily apprehensions in the region have fallen in recent weeks. Shelby Park touches the river, includes a ramp for boaters, and has been used by the state to stage vehicles and equipment for its border mission known as Operation Lone Star. Salinas said the state gave Eagle Pass officials no warning and offered no timetable on when the park would reopen. He said a DPS official told him the state was taking custody of the park through a disaster declaration, an authority Texas officials have used before on the border. "That is not a decision that we agreed to," Salinas said. "This is not something that we wanted. This is not something we asked for as a city." Asked about the closure, Abbott spokeswoman Renee Ezzi did not address the park or the mayor's comments and instead reiterated criticism of President Joe Biden's immigration policies. "Texas will continue to deploy Texas National Guard soldiers, DPS troopers, and more barriers, utilizing every tool and strategy to respond to President Biden's ongoing border crisis," she said in a statement. U.S. Customs and Border Protection did not respond to her request for comment. Eagle Pass is in the path of totality for the total solar eclipse in April. Salinas said the park has invested $1 million for a planned festival in the park and expressed worry over the closure disrupting those plans. Over the summer, thousands of people were crossing illegally into the U.S. through Eagle Pass. The numbers subsided but rose again in December when thousands of migrants overwhelmed federal resources. But a sharp decrease was noted at the start of January after Mexico stepped up immigration enforcement. The number of daily apprehensions decreased from the thousands to about 400 or 500, according to the mayor. Eagle Pass also is where Texas has put up buoy barriers in the Rio Grande, arrested migrants on state trespassing charges. Last summer, Salinas signed a blanket trespassing charge affidavit to allow trespassing arrests on park grounds during a spike in migrant crossings. Following local backlash, he rescinded the affidavit before signing it again weeks later. Chesapeake Energy, Southwestern Energy combining $7.4 billion all-stock deal to form one of country's biggest natural gas producers, by Michelle Chapman, business writer. Chesapeake Energy and Southwestern Energy are combining in a $7.4 billion all-stock deal to form one of the biggest natural gas producers in the U.S. There have been a string of deals in the energy sector, including the nearly $60 billion acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources by ExxonMobil and a $53 billion deal between Chevron and Hess. Southwestern shareholders will receive 0.0867 shares of Chesapeake common stock for each outstanding share of Southwestern common stock at closing. Chesapeake shareholders will own about 60% of the combined company, while Southwestern shareholders will own approximately 40%. The transaction, valued at $6.69 per share, will create a company that has large-scale acreage in the Appalachia area and Haynesville, Louisiana. It has current net production of approximately 7.9 billion cubic feet equivalent, with more than 5,000 gross locations and 15 years of inventory. The world is short energy, and demand for our products is growing, both in the U.S. and overseas, Chesapeake CEO Nick Deloso said in a prepared statement Thursday. We will be positioned to deliver more natural gas at a lower cost, accelerating America's energy reach and fueling a more affordable, reliable, and lower carbon future. The combined company will build a facility in Houston to supply lower cost, lower carbon energy to meet increasing domestic and international liquefied natural gas demand. The combined company will have a new name, but that has not yet been disclosed. The boards of both companies have approved the deal, which is expected to close in the second quarter. It still needs approval from Chesapeake and Southwestern shareholders. Shares of Southwestern, based in Houston, declined more than 3% before the market opened, while shares of Chesapeake, based in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, rose slightly. State gas prices rise, by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices in West Texas fell this week, while many Texas cities experienced rising fuel prices. According to AAA, gas prices statewide have been fluctuating in the $2.60 to $2.70 range since before Christmas. Crude oil prices, which climbed slightly last week, are holding steady this week, AAA reported Thursday. Due to crude oil prices, the state gas price average increased by 2 cents this week. AAA reported that a healthy supply of resources in the state kept gas prices from higher increases. Gasoline price increases were minimal this week, with the statewide average climbing 2 cents, stated Daniel Armbruster, spokesperson for AAA Texas. Currently, the average cost of regular unleaded gas in Texas stands approximately 16 cents below the price recorded a year ago. Gas prices in 14 of the 27 Texas metropolitan areas AAA surveys increased. Gas prices in Brownsville and McAllen climbed by 16 and 12 cents, respectively. West Texas dodged the small wave of rising gas prices that the state experienced this week. Gas prices in Abilene dipped by 5 cents, and fuel in El Paso became 10 cents cheaper on average. Gas prices in Midland, Lubbock fell by 5 cents, while gas prices in Odessa decreased by 3 cents. Fuel prices in San Angelo fell 7 cents. Amarillo at 247 and Lubbock at 248 are home to the cheapest gas prices in the state. After a small increase in the state's average gas price, Texas is now home to the fourth cheapest fuel in the nation as of January 11, 2024. BizBuzz. Rice talks management style, future plans for the Fuel Bar, by Ben Schaefer. Alexis Rice, owner of the Fuel Bar, cares for her employees and wants to see them grow through their time at the health food restaurant. Rice gave a presentation about her management style, her future plans, and differentiating themselves at January's Founders Blend Meetup at Midland College on Wednesday. Rice opened the Fuel Bar in August 2019. She currently has a team of 13 employees, and four have been with the Fuel Bar for 3 years or more, which Rice said is important, especially in the fast-moving food industry. But that comes with caring about that person, Rice said. While the fuel bar owner has given her staff members material gifts like tickets to the Dallas Cowboys, she cares more about impacting their lives in a positive way. To be able to pay her team more money, Rice recently returned to the oil field where she had worked prior to opening the fuel bar. In a friendship, if I fill your cup, you are going to want to keep me around, right? It's a mutual thing, Rice said, describing her management style. If you don't take time to care about that person, you can't expect them to care about you. Rice said a task she wants to take on in the future is starting a nonprofit-style organization that raises money for scholarships for her employees. I want them to have better. I'm not saying working for me is bad, but I want them to have better. And if funding their education is something that I can help improve their life long-term, I want to do it, she said. As a cafe that mainly serves healthy breakfast foods, smoothies, and grab-and-go lunches, Rice said that the fuel bar stands out because of customer service. Their location at 610 North Big Spring Street and the quality of ingredients compared to franchise chains. Rice said since she was young, she had wanted to assist the lives of those with special needs. Diamondback Energy started its Rolling Baristas initiative in September 2023, which gives MISD students with special needs the opportunity to serve coffee and snacks to the employees, providing them with social opportunities and interaction. Rice announced Wednesday that the two parties have worked out a deal to have graduates of the Rolling Baristas program become employees at the fuel bar. She added that the fuel bar will soon expand to the inside of Diamondback's headquarters, so their new team members will remain close to their friends at Diamondback Energy. As a former Diamondback Energy employee, it's a full circle moment, Rice explained. This next step is beyond everything I ever could have imagined, and I think giving back to the community is what I want more than anything in this whole situation, Rice said. Obituaries and death notices. Florence Flo Beeson Curry. Florence Flo Beeson Curry died on December 29, 2023, at the age of 87. Flo was born on December 11, 1936, to Mamie and Porter Beeson in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. Flo was preceded in death by her husband, Max Earl Curry, and her infant son, Michael Ray Hall. Her brothers, Robert and Virgil Beeson, and sisters, Glenda Haltom and Sandra Mayfield. She is survived by her daughter, Angela Esmond Spencer, and her son, James W. Esmond. She is also survived by six grandchildren. Additionally, Flo is survived by her sister, Lisa Mimi, and her brothers, Bucky and Roy Beeson. There will be a small service for immediate family members. The family asks that in lieu of flowers, donations be sent to the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in memory of Flo Curry or to a charity of your choice. Arrangements have been entrusted to Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park.
Permian Basin again dominates drilling and completion statistics. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. The Permian Basin again dominated drilling permit and completion statistics, according to December figures released by the Railroad Commission. The three Railroad Commission districts located in the Permian, San Angelo's 7C, Midland's 8, and Lubbock's 8A, combined for almost 400 of the 669 original drilling permits issued by the commission. The total includes 621 to drill new oil or gas wells, 14 to re-enter plugged well bores, and 33 for recompletions of existing well bores. The breakdown of well types for total original drilling permits in December 2023 is 120 oil, 38 gas, 475 oil and gas, 25 injection, 2 service, and 9 other permits. In December 2023, Commission staff processed 506 oil, 129 gas, and 77 injection completions for new drills, re-entries, and recompletions. With inaugural council meeting, Texas forges ahead in hydrogen development. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Texas legislators last year tasked the Railroad Commission with establishing the Texas Hydrogen Production Policy Council to oversee development of the state's hydrogen potential. The agency announced this week it has selected 11 council members to serve alongside Railroad Commission Chairman Christy Craddock. The first meeting was held in mid-December. Quote, "Hydrogen is blowing and going in Texas, to say the least," Susan Shiflett, executive director of the Texas Hydrogen Alliance. Speaking with the Reporter-Telegram by telephone, she noted that representatives of 5 of her association's members, GTI Energy, Port of Corpus Christi, Chevron, CenterPoint Energy, and Air Liquide, are all on the council. The goal, she added, is to receive guidance on transporting, distributing, and storing hydrogen. Under the legislation, House Bill 2847, the council is tasked with making recommendations to the legislature on updates necessary for the oversight and regulation of production, pipeline transportation, and storage of hydrogen. Duties will include developing a state plan for hydrogen production oversight by the Commission, analyzing the development of hydrogen industries around the state, and monitoring regional efforts for the application and development of a clean hydrogen hub authorized under the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Shiflett said the recent selection of the Houston area for a federal Gulf Coast hydrogen hub, with $1.2 billion in federal funding available, is just the beginning of hydrogen development in Texas. Multinational majors like ExxonMobil, Chevron, and ConocoPhillips are looking at hydrogen, and the effort is also attracting smaller companies and entrepreneurs. Texas has a pipeline infrastructure that can carry hydrogen to Texas ports for export, she pointed out. Quote, "I believe hydrogen will be the bridge between the energy of today and the energy of tomorrow," she stated. "The Permian Basin has a role to play," she said. "Not only is the region home to solar arrays and wind farms that can provide the energy needed to produce hydrogen, but oil and gas are sources of hydrogen," she noted. Quote, "Everybody likes to use the term energy transition, but I prefer to use the terminology energy expansion," she said. And while there are different types of hydrogen, blue, green, brown, Shiflett said her alliance is all about growing hydrogen energy. Quote, "There are so many applications for hydrogen," she said. She added her alliance plans to embark on education efforts from rules and regulations regarding hydrogen production, transportation, and storage, to training first responders to safely respond to hydrogen-related incidents. Newly appointed council members are Richard Fenza from Air Liquide, Preston Kurtz from Air Products and Chemicals, Nigel Genthy from Baker Hughes, Keith Wall from CenterPoint Energy, Ian Lindsay from Chevron New Energies, Angie Murray from Enterprise Products, Scott Anderson from Environmental Defense Fund, Brian Weeks from GTI Energy, Jeffrey Pollack from Port of Corpus Christi Authority, Brian Korgel from the University of Texas, and Kelsey Van Hoos from Williams Companies. Drilling activity doldrums continue. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. A new year brought continued softness in the nation's drilling activity. Oil field services firm Baker Hughes said Friday that the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly since 1944 dropped one rig to 621 for the week after rising two rigs the previous week. The tally is 151 rigs below the 772 reported last January. The number of rigs seeking crude oil inched up one rig to 501, still 117 fewer rigs than the 618 drilling for oil a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell by two rigs to 118, down 34 rigs from the 152 rigs seen last year. Texas dipped by one rig for 308 rigs active statewide, down 70 from the 378 rigs seen in the first week of 2023. New Mexico was unchanged at 97 rigs. Wyoming, with one, joined Texas as a producing state seeing a decline, while Kansas, with one, was the only producing state to see a gain. The Permian Basin bucked the downward trend, adding two rigs to see 311 rigs active throughout the region, but still down 42 rigs from 353 reported last year. Eddy County, New Mexico, vaulted past Lee County, New Mexico, to become the most active county in the Permian, adding four rigs, the biggest gain among Permian counties, to see 50 rigs at work within county lines. Lee County fell four rigs, the biggest drop among Permian counties, for 44 rigs. Martin County lost one rig for 36 rigs for the week. Reeves County had 32 rigs for a second week. Midland County fell one rig to 26, followed by Loving County with 21 rigs, down one for the week. Upton and Ward counties each reported 13 rigs, up one for Upton and unchanged for Ward. Glasscock County had 10 rigs for a second week. Enverus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 657 during the week ended January 3rd, down 15 rigs from the previous week's high point. The count is down 18 rigs, or 3% in the last month, and down 204 rigs, or 24% year over year. Most of the decrease in the last week came from drilling programs outside the major basins. Among the major basins, the Gulf Coast two-rig drop was the largest, leaving it with 73 rigs running. Appalachia and the Permian dropped one rig each to 40 and 293. The Williston Basin added one rig to reach 35, while the Anadarko and DJ basins were flat at 52 and 15 rigs.
GM's Cruise Catastrophe. Cruise, a driverless taxi service that automaker General Mills once hailed as a quantum leap forward, is turning out to be a financial jalopy instead. After piling up more than $8 billion in operating losses during the past 7 years, Cruise has been sent to the repair shop while GM tries to figure out what went wrong with the audacious robotic driving startup that it bought for $1 billion in 2016. Cruise's ambitions blew up in early October after one of its robo-taxis dragged a pedestrian to the side of a street in San Francisco after the person was hit by another car. The incident prompted California regulators to suspend Cruise's license to operate hundreds of robo-taxis throughout San Francisco, less than a month after the expansion was authorized over the strenuous objections of city officials who asserted the driverless vehicles were still too hazardous to be trusted. Regulators also allege Cruise attempted to cover up the severity of the incident. In the fallout, GM jettisons Cruise's founding CEO, along with about 900 employees. The company also backed off its previous projections that the robo-taxi service would bring in $1 billion in revenue by 2025. Protecting your credit. Three things that could impact your credit in 2024. Holiday debt. Holiday purchases could follow you for months. Payment history is the biggest factor influencing your credit scores. If you're carrying a debt, make at least the minimum payments on your cards to keep your payment history intact and shield your scores. But paying a higher amount, if you're able to, is better for your credit utilization, another major factor in score calculations. Using too much of available credit can make you appear risky to lenders. To prevent bookending the year with debt, start planning 2024 holiday spending now, says Heath Kerlock, a financial counselor in Prince George's County, Maryland. Setting spending limits for gifts, making lists, and being honest with loved ones about your situation are strategies Kerlock recommends. Zero credit card delinquencies. Debt is surging outside of holiday spending, too. Debt balances of all types grew by $228 billion. In the third quarter of 2023, according to a report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. If your credit card account becomes delinquent, usually when it's 30 days or more past due, pay the bill as soon as possible. The later a payment gets, the more damage it does. Negative marks may hinder your ability to open new lines of credit or secure desirable interest rates. Try calling your card issuer or writing a goodwill letter to ask if it will remove the missed payment from your reports. And for student loans, federal student loans started accruing interest again in September 2023, and payments resumed in October. Making payments after a 3.5-year-long pause has put pressure on borrowers' finances. The Education Department established a 12-month on-ramp period to help those who might be struggling with student loan bills protect their credit. During this period, which lasts through September 30th of 2024, missed payments won't be considered delinquent, go into default, or be reported to credit bureaus and debt collection agencies. Still, skipping payments is risky. Interest will keep accruing and your balance will rise. If you're able to make loan payments during the on-ramp period, it's best to do so. Payment on a house or build a healthy emergency fund. Once you've nailed down your goals, you can determine how much money you'll need. Then set a timeline for saving it.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, January 6th, 2024. Religion. Perez's find new life in Odessa. Minister and family came here from Venezuela. By Bob Campbell. The Reverend Daniel Perez's faith was tested when his wife Jasmine was severely burned in a cooking accident, but she survived after they moved from Venezuela to Miami, Florida, and then to Odessa, where he became the Spanish language pastor at Odessa Bible Church in August 2019. A native of Maracaibo, he went to law school, became an attorney, and practiced for 2 years till working for a bank in Valencia for 9 years in macro management and small business development. But the example of his grandfather, the Reverend Pedro Perez, proved too powerful to resist. and he was attending a seminary in Bogota, Colombia, when his wife suffered nearly fatal injuries to her face and chest. It was a really bad accident, the Reverend Perez said. The doctors told us she would probably die if we moved back to Venezuela, and after considering all the options, the United States was the best place for her to get well in. She is better now. It was a miracle. God is good. This is a new beginning and a new perspective on how temporary we are on this earth. Perez preaches to an average of 50 to 60 people in the 12:15 p.m. Sunday services at Odessa Bible Church, 3901 Penbrook, where he sometimes plays the flute. He and his wife have two children. I had always felt the call, but it took me a while to submit to that call completely, said Perez, whose favorite scriptures are Jeremiah 29:7, John 3:16, and Romans 5:8, which says, "But God demonstrates his own love for us in this, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." The minister said his grandfather had been evangelized by American missionaries in the 1950s, and he went on to become a very influential pastor. I saw how many lives he changed by the power of faith and the love of God, and I wanted to give back what I had received through the generations, Perez said. I believe that knowing God is the best tool for the real freedom that mankind is looking for. Jesus is the only hope and the only way to truth so that people can find eternal life through him. We use Bible study to show how to lead a better life and put our faith into practice by loving others and serving our community. We are put here to testify about Jesus and be the light and salt of the earth. The Reverend Robert Thayer, lead pastor of Odessa Bible Church, said Perez makes a great impression for Christ. Daniel loves God and loves others, and he is willing to serve, the Reverend Thayer said. He has gone from door to door at neighborhood apartment complexes with our parishioners, and he has a great relationship with the whole congregation. He is a delight to work with. We love him. He is a great blessing not only to our church, but to the whole city. His heart breaks for Venezuela and how socialism has destroyed his country. Thayer explained that when 7 people were killed and 25 wounded in a mass shooting here, August 31st, 2019, during Perez's first week in Odessa, Daniel was right there. He met me at the hospital, and he had his arms around a lot of Spanish speakers and really helped during that chaotic time, Thayer said. All of them were perfect strangers to him, but he interceded for them there in that moment. Blessed Youth organizers hope for strong turnout. An ordained pastor and nationally known mental health advocate is the featured speaker for Blessed Youth, caring for youth mental health in the Permian Basin. Sarah Lund, an ordained pastor out of the United Church of Christ in Indianapolis, will be in Odessa for the event, scheduled for 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. January 16th in the Ray Greathouse Hall at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $15 and are available on Eventbrite. It includes lunch, and continuing education credits are available. It is sponsored by Connection Christian Church, Faith Inclusion Network, First Christian Church, Grace Presbyterian Church, Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center, and St. Nicholas Episcopal Church. Along with Lund's appearance, there will be small group discussions about youth mental health in the Permian Basin and how we can work together more effectively for the sake of our kids, said Reverend Don Weeks, co-pastor of Connection Christian Church. Participants will include Weeks and other clergy from the community, such as Mary Beth Anton and Amy Haney. The goal and hope is that churches will learn from this event how to more effectively participate in mental health care for kids. Lund is a member of several national mental health advisory groups, and she has written 3 books on mental health. Weeks said the most recent is on youth mental health and includes a guide for teens so they can help themselves and their friends. This at least ensures that they have adequate information and that what they're sharing is accurate. It's been wildly popular in terms of numbers sold. School districts are giving them out, and churches are giving them out, and trying to combat, especially in rural areas like this where there's not readily accessible mental health care, to try to give as much support that is not expensive and is accessible, Weeks said. Groups often work on mental health in the community, but Weeks couldn't think of anything like this on youth mental health that will pull together schools, the counseling community, faith community, and mental health advocates all in one space, she added. There are often groups doing things for mental health, so this is by no means unique in that way. We're trying to reach anybody who relates to youth, including parents, to come and be a part of this, to hear a positive word about what we can do in this very serious situation we're facing with youth mental health, Weeks said. The idea for the conference stemmed from a desire to see churches more intentionally connect with the problems and opportunities in our community and be a part of the solution, she added. It came out of a coalition of churches saying, what's a need in our community and how can we offer something that is a positive connection to helping with that, Weeks said. Asked if the flurry of threats at the beginning of the school year also contributed to the idea for the conference, Weeks said the concept started long before that, beginning with the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting, and then exacerbated by COVID. The lack of mental health accessibility also played a factor. Most of our counseling centers have a 2-week waiting list to get in. All of those things we've known. This is an area that needs our support, Weeks said. She added that she hopes the stigma around asking for help has diminished. I think people are being more open when they have received help, and that encourages and empowers other people to get help. So if those who have had a hard time and gotten through it with some resources will speak and give testimony to that, that is what I see that encourages other people to get help. I think we're getting better about some of the warning signs and the symptoms. We have really improved access in our public schools. There's a great program with ECISD and Texas Tech where psychiatric care is available to kids through school nurse offices. We're doing good things to try to get more access, she added. Youth mental health is important, as kids don't have the perspective to know that things will get better. They need adults to tell them that. Research shows that if a kid has one consistent, caring, encouraging adult in their life, they can do much better. And that's true with mental health as well. They just need that connection, that access point, to someone who is going to help them figure out things will get better, Weeks said. She added that parents and grandparents should be asking if things are okay with their children. Weeks said it's a question we should be asking youngsters and people who work with them so that we can work together to make things okay for our children. Organizers are planning for 80 people. It really is a think tank. People who are really working with kids. So if we get 80, I think we will have some good things happen, Reverend Weeks said.
Midland Health. Consider water exercise. What are you waiting for? The new year is here, and it's time for your annual ritual of resolving to, quote, moving more and sitting less, end quote, but finding yourself unmotivated. Instead, start the new year by looking for something new and consider water exercise in an indoor pool. They're not just for lap swimming. Whether the water is warm or cold, deep or shallow, we have the perfect water exercise class for you. COM's Aquatic Wellness Director, Rita Simmons, shares several reasons to try an aquatic exercise class this year. Water exercise is low impact. The upward force called, quote, buoyancy, end quote, helps to make pressure to take pressure off of joints, making exercising much easier and allowing a safe way to work out for all. Water exercise is a full-body workout. The natural resistance created by exercising in the water strengthens muscles, increases cardiovascular endurance, and challenges your balance in a safe and supportive environment. Water exercise is known for its rehabilitation properties. People with arthritis or a chronic disease found improvement in the use of affected joints and muscles with agitating symptoms. Exercising in a heated pool, 85 to 92, helps soothe pain and allows an increased range of motion of joints. Water exercise with a group can be fun. Joining a water exercise class is a great outlet to decrease stress and improve an overall sense of well-being. People feel better about themselves when they are actively engaged, not only physically, but making those connections with others socially. Water exercise is a great way to get moving this new year. For more information on how to get started exercising in the water, contact Rita at 432-684-7755. Mayo Clinic. The connection between cervical cancer and HPV. January is Cervical Health Awareness Month, which makes this a good time to learn about the connection between HPV and cervical cancer. Approximately 13,000 new cases of cervical cancer are diagnosed each year in the U.S., and 4,000 women die of the disease, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Hispanic women have the highest rates of developing cervical cancer, while African American women are at greatest risk of dying from this cancer. Early-stage cervical cancer generally produces no signs or symptoms. Indications of more advanced cervical cancer include vaginal bleeding after intercourse, between periods, or after menopause. Watery, bloody vaginal discharge that may be heavy and have a foul odor, and pelvic pain or pain during intercourse. Various strains of HPV, a viral infection, play a role in causing most cervical cancer. When people are exposed to genital HPV, their immune systems usually prevent the virus from doing serious harm. But sometimes the virus survives for years. Eventually, the virus can convert normal cells on the surface of the cervix into cancerous cells. Cervical cancer may take 20 years or longer to develop after an HPV infection. Gardasil 9 is an HPV vaccine approved by the Food and Drug Administration for males and females 9 to 45. This vaccine can prevent most cases of cervical cancer if a girl or a woman is vaccinated before being exposed to the virus. In addition, this vaccine can prevent vaginal and vulvar cancer in women, as well as genital warts, anal cancer, and mouth, throat, head, and neck cancers in men and women. Treatment for cervical cancer depends on several factors, including the stage of the cancer, other health problems you may have, and your personal preferences. Treatment may include surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, targeted drug therapy, immunotherapy, and palliative care.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.